I don't know how many of you ever used the I Ching, the Chinese Book of Changes, something I discovered back in the 60s. It's sort of a book of Chinese wisdom, I think Taoist. It tries to help you understand the moment that you're in. Yeah. It's a book of wisdom. It helps you look at an imprint of this very second and perhaps perceive it differently than you might have had you looked through your own limited perceptors. And so this morning I decided to throw it because I wanted to tell you whatever it said. And for whatever reason, in the last so many years, it has been so dead on, so absolute. And today was no different. Basically, it was the hexagram of mountain over earth, which means ignorance rules. And what do? When ignorance is everywhere. Pretty precise, I thought. And it said, among other things, be patient. Because there's not a lot you can do. Be patient. Don't try to confront it. Because ignorance doesn't respond well to confrontation. You're not going to correct it with intelligence or wisdom. It also said, develop a sense of humor. Which I think is probably a good thing to do. It had one changing line. If you know the I Ching, it's six lines and some of them are unbreakable, some transform into something else. And this one line, number five, said basically that you can make friends of your enemies. And it said there were gifts that come out of times like this. And they have to do with being given an imperative, if you will, and an opportunity to look at life more clearly, to see it more deeply, to see the things you would not have seen that would have been obscured to you in the blindness of our normal daily routine. So I thought I would share it with you because these just seem like appropriate words, appropriate ideas. I also wanted to talk today about something very simply called truth. The last few weeks I've been hitting some major themes. A couple of weeks ago was reality. And truth is a good one. And hard to come to for most of us. Because there is our truth, and then there is the truth. And very few people ever see past their own truth. And in most cases, we're not meant to. How do you see past your understanding and vision of the world? It's so built in, it's so locked into the framework of your vision that you look out through your particular sort of lenses and you see it as it comes to you and it's processed by the person you've become over the course of however many years or decades, And it's very hard to deny what you see as the truth. But those of you who wear glasses know that every so often your glasses and your prescription are no longer right. You're no longer seeing the world clearly, you're seeing it more obscured. But you don't know you are until the optometrist says, "Poof, your eyes have changed. Time to look more deeply. Time to get clearer." And then they give you these lenses to keep adjusting until you go, "Ah, now I see." And so every so often you get to look at life and realize that you've been seeing it through either dirty or obscured or improperly focused lenses. And in a way, we're all being given an opportunity to look differently at the world. We're in a very interesting moment, all of us. Let me give you the non-dualist's version of it. The non-dualist, deep spiritual version of the world is, it has always been thus. It is what it is. Accept it as it is. Part of the vision of people who've meditated forever, people who have awakened, is that if you go deep enough, the world is a dream and an illusion of very little consequence. And many people seek meditation as a way of entering into a space where what's happening out here on the surface of the planet or the surface of the mind doesn't really matter so much. Because you can find a place of profound repose and comfort and security deep within yourself. And you don't have to really engage the outer very much, because you can see it as a dreamlike configuration. And there's real truth to that. But I don't think most of you are seeing it through that lens. And so to try to teach a spiritual perspective that doesn't really resonate with the moment that many people are in seems to me to be unhelpful. And so I would say for this moment, the words "accept it as it is not completely satisfying, because we're being asked to accept stuff from a outer perspective that is not, to many of us, palatable, or pleasing. Of course, we're aware that there's a whole half of our society and our culture that is just fine with things as they are. And many of you, or some of you in this room, may be part of that. I honestly haven't sat down with you and had political conversations. I don't have them pretty much with anybody. But for those of you who have been in some ways disenfranchised or are feeling that the world has become other than what you would like it to be, what do you do? What's the prognosis, and what is the antidote? And it's a really good question for people who are struggling. So if this speaks to you, great. If this doesn't speak to you, turn it off, because you don't need to hear it. I have been incredibly sensitive to and aware of the cultural, even planetary dynamic that's occurring right now, because it's shifting. And because it appears to be, as I said with the I Ching, ignorance is prevalent. I think last week I talked about darkness as prevalent. And they're partly the same thing. Ignorance is the opposite of wisdom. Wisdom is the large view. the cosmic view, the planetary view, the universal view. It's big, it's encompassing, it is allowing, it is compassionate, it is vast. Ignorance is very self-serving, very ego-minded, very me, mine. Ignorance does not particularly look to the future in any particular way other than a way of accumulating and having more for oneself. It doesn't gain lessons from the past very much. The past is just something that discomforts or torments or maybe pleasures in some way, but it's really, it's about reaching for more me, mine stuff, which is really the way most people live. In some subtle way, even those with a kind of wisdom always keep looking for perpetual comfort, ease, sustainability, pleasure of the love of others, all of these qualities that I call in many talks familiar, the sustainability of the familiar. And there's something wise, I guess, in seeing that life does not stay familiar. But most of us have this hunger for the known and a fear of the unknown. We want things to be knowable. And we find it very hard to imagine living with the unknown as a constant. Ignorance fights that idea of living with the unknown. Ignorance actually wants to create a known. Ignorance wants to go back to the books and say, well, if it was this way, and this way, it should become that and that. Wisdom is knowing. It doesn't quite work like that. It just is what it is. Life is not as linear as it appears to be. Wisdom is settling back and going, something bigger is operating here. Something is arriving. Something is taking place. And to be at odds with that, to be in battle mode, to be angry, to say, not my president, or whatever it is that one is doing, is to confront ignorance with ignorance in many ways. For those of you who are out there carrying signs, I'm not trying to be judgmental. I'm just trying to tell you that it's not necessarily totally effective. Not that it's wrong. But for your own sanity, for your own spiritual upliftment, if you will, one has to begin to bring wisdom into the equation, the big view, the larger view. And the larger view, in a way, is a view that you aren't even in. The larger view is a view of the universe somehow doing what it needs and wants to do, independent of the individuals within it. Not separate from, but just it has its own vast agenda which our minds will not and cannot conceive of. So the journey into wisdom really is a journey into allowing what is to be as best as you can. Even when you think it's bad for the world, and bad for you, and bad for people you care about, there is a part of you that has to sit down inside yourself and go, I get it. And you make a certain kind of peace within yourself that goes, thy will be done. This does not mean that you don't observe the world, that you don't have critical mind in relationship to the world, even that you might wish it to be healthier and wiser and more compassionate and loving to the greater whole. That may not go away. It may in fact get magnified. But there's also within that a space that you go to that you can sit back and go, basically, God's in his heaven, or her heaven, or its heaven. And all is well with the world. Now, look, if I were a rabbi in Berlin in 1938, talking to my congregation and trying to give this speech, which I've thought about, what does one say? What does one say to the congregation that is suddenly experiencing a kind of unacceptable upheaval? What do you say? It is a tough conversation. For those who still have a chance to get out, maybe it's to encourage get out. But in those days, you could actually go to safe havens. We're living in a really strange time. There is nowhere to go. Where can you go? Because what's happening ultimately is planetary. There's nowhere to go. I mean Canada, right? but there's no reality, really, to going somewhere. The reality is basically sitting still and being with what is. But back to Germany. What do you say to people when Kristallnacht happens and they're breaking the windows of your parishioners or people in your synagogue? What do you say to them? I don't have the speech. I just know that I walk around every day wondering what that speech should be. Because we are in a time that we've never been in. We as a culture have been so inoculated against so much of the upheaval of the world. Most of us came in after World War II. There have been wars away from us that have been, yes, terrible, and there's stuff going on in the world now that we are, because of television, deeply aware of, a lot of also awful insults to the human experience that are happening everywhere on the planet. And yet we have lived these really extraordinary lives. It's interesting to consider the lives that we're in and how it arrived and what's happening to it. And I'm going to be just vaguely historical, back again to Berlin and being in America and watching Berlin happen, not from a synagogue on the streets of the city, but from somewhere in mid-America. And you're looking at this thing happening way over there, and you're going, it's not my problem. Not my problem. And then, suddenly it is your problem. Suddenly your country decides it needs to be helpful to the world. But let me explain something which is really interesting. Just before that upheaval, America was in the biggest depression that had ever been on the planet. The deepest, darkest depression ever. And that depression was unsolvable with the greatest efforts made by an electorate that brought in a president who created a whole new society of caring for all of the people. A president who actually said, as you all know classically, there's nothing to fear but fear itself, who governed brilliantly, he could not get us out of that depression. What got us out of the depression was going to war with the darkness and what it took to arm the country, to make this country strong enough to go to war, and that employed all of these people who had been unemployed. And so this horrible, horrible darkness in Europe became the force that brought us together and gave us strength and power. And because we won the war, we had a society that was in play after the war that we all were born into. We were born into this extraordinary moment in time where there was a kind of generalized peace around the world. Yes, there were little places of not peace, but mostly peace, and in our country, there was peace. There was change and transformation. There was people being employed to work. They took armaments and turned them into cars, and we built cars, and we built freeways, and we had everybody working. We had steel mills. We had so much going on, and all of that stuff began to produce carbon emissions that started to ruin the atmosphere. the world around us started to offer cheaper labor than we were able to provide at home, and so the globalization began of sending work elsewhere, and people here were not employed. So that incredible burst of openness and activity that took place after World War II was the source of the beginning of what we're experiencing right now. So what we're having is these huge movements of global energy that take place, out of which some people experience wonderful things and other people experience terrible things, and it keeps shifting around. And we are in the middle of another shift. The only thing is, we've never experienced it before. We, the blessed members of the American society, have never had anything worse than certain political parties at play at various times, depending upon your perspective. Again, I don't want to guess your perspective. Some of you probably hated when Clinton came in, hated when Bush came in. I don't know. These are the dynamics of a society at play, and it's an incredible dynamic. But what's happening right now is other and different and important. And it's important because you cannot sit on your rear end and just meditate this away. You cannot go out there and march in the street and think that alone will do something. You have to find in yourself what it is you are supposed to do now. And one of the instincts that I have to share with you is this extraordinary spiritual dichotomy between doing and being. Doing involves action, going out and confronting the life in front of you, whatever that may be. Some of you may just have to find work. Some of you may have to, you know, put bread on the table for family. Some of you are in a position to just go about your daily work without having to be affected terribly by what's going on around you. And others of you are going to go, oh my God, the climate is changing and the world is changing, and we're up for something major here, something big and transformative. Yes, there's stuff to do. You can go out and say, I do not want the world's climate to be ignored. I want it to be acknowledged. I want to do what can be done. You can do that. You can do that. It might be healthy to do that. But that's the doing. What's the being? What is the being? Being observes the world. Being witnesses the world. Being experiences the world, but it is not touched by the world. Being is a space that not everyone has access to consciously, even though everyone is being. I mean, we are human beings. That's, we're beings. We be. But most of us are not aware of how we be, how we are being, or what being is. The extraordinary thing about meditation is that it stops you in your tracks. It stops you from doing. It stops you from working toward the future, from anger at the past. It just brings you into this present tense being. And you sit still in it, if you can find the stillness, because a lot of people can't. But if you try it and you work the muscle of stillness, you sit still and this thing starts to open. And being goes deep. It goes deeper and deeper and deeper and more expansively and more expansive. Being is vast, it is eternal, it is infinite, and it happens to be you. You are being itself. That's what you are. This outer thing that's going on, which is so dynamic and so powerful and so engaging to the body, to the physiology of our being, to the mentality of our daily life, when you go really deep, it takes on a different perspective. You don't lose interest in it. You don't deny its power. You don't go, oh, that's the world. It's just a dream. You go, ah, ah. You feel the balance. You feel yourself as that which is the world, which is the world, but it's also the universe. It's also everything that is, was, will be. It is timeless. It is beyond linear experience. It just is the totality and the absolute of our nature. And you cannot know that absolute of your nature outwardly. You can only know it by going deep in. And if you don't go deep in, you will be buffeted by all of the winds of change, which right now are hurricane-like, and maybe hurricane 3 as opposed to 5, moving toward 5. But right now, whatever that is, how are you going to keep from being totally buffeted around by all the stuff that's going on around you? The answer is, you know, doing what we do. Dive deep. Sit still. Enter into the vastness of your interior truth. Let that start to express itself. And then all of these external truths of this is what it is, or this is what it should be, or this is what it might become. You know, you listen to CNN, you listen to NBC, you read Politico, Daily Kos, whatever your things are, you know, or Breitbart, whatever it's called, whatever you read, those are all very temporal truths, and they're not even truths, they're just thoughts and ideas of other people, which may or may not be more valid than your own. How do you balance that stuff? By going into the silence. By going to the place where that noise is not banging around in your head, where you're sitting there in a state of profound stillness and going, ah. Here's a great thing. I talk about it all the time, but that stillness envelops you. That stillness welcomes you. That stillness comforts you. It allows you to feel like, and I said this many times now, what it's like when you go to sleep at night. It's this extraordinarily exquisite taking you in, only it takes you in awake. That's what we're doing here. That's what we're doing. We are sitting here creating balance with the outer. But now what's happening is the outer is so dynamic that if your balance on the inside is shallow, it won't balance. You will be thrown off kilter. You will be thrown into all of the noise and all of the drama that's happening around you, and you will be caught and swept up in the tornado of existence. And you don't need to be. You can come down deep. You can have strong foundations, strong roots. You can let the winds pass through you. They can blow you every which way, but the root system of your inner existence will hold you firm. You will be the wisdom in the world of ignorance. You will watch the world go by and you will go, yep, yep, yep. Not the first time, not the last time. You know, you may go into a state, I know I do, of I kind of go into the why of it. I know it's stupid because there's no answer. But I really do ask, why evil, why good, why the battle, why duality, why the fight? And I have no resolution for it. There is no resolution for it. There is no answer for it. It's just the nature of the building blocks of consciousness, the building blocks of matter. And so you have to kind of accept these forces, and you go back inside and you just sit in the place that says, shh, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay. And in a way it will also say, you will be fine. Now let me say to you, you will be fine doesn't mean you won't be killed or be dead or that you might not lose your life and everything you care about. And everyone you care about. How does you'll be fine register with that level of loss, that level of horror, really? Well, it's the only thing you've got. It's all you've got. You will be fine. You may not be fine going through it, but there will be, if you really reach deep into this inner space, there will be a knowledge that you trust. You will feel one way or another. This thing that takes you in will take you in, and it will make everything right. Now, if this is just a story that we tell ourselves, and I don't believe it is, but if it is just a story that we tell ourselves, it's a good story. It will help you through. It will get you through dark times. If you find that you can dive deep into this space, you will know, I believe, it's my experience that it is true. It is an ultimate truth. Now, there are temporal truths, and there is an ultimate truth. And temporal truths are easily blown away. the truth you thought that this was absolute and real, you know, that life was good, that people you love will prevail, whatever, you know, storybook ideas you have about truth, these are very, very comforting, but they don't sustain really because they can get washed away by events. This deeper truth is sustainable. It's sustaining. It's you. It's your real truth. It allows you to see and witness the totality of being and again go, thy will be done. It's very big. If there's such a thing as size, if there's such a thing as measurement, it is as big as it gets. So I would encourage you, those of you who've been meditating here for a long time and those of you who've been meditating for a shorter time, this is a path toward one's inner depth and one's inner truth. Any truth that's given to you from the outside, including me talking to you or anybody else you might read, is not going to hold up. The only thing that will hold up is the truth you discover in your own journey. The truth you come to, the hard-won truth that you come to. I've talked before about people I've met who've gone through horrible grief, loss of children and all these different things, as being among the most grounded and rooted human beings I've ever met. Because the only way they could survive the tragedies of their life was to find this space, this fundamental space within themselves. And the only way they got there, the only thing that would ever lead them to that space was tragic, tragic external event. You can try to go there without tragedy, and sometimes it really does work. You can simply look at life and go, it is tragic. You can feel other people's tragedy, just turn on the news, and use that as the stimulus to go, there's something more, there's something deeper, there's something more profound going on here, and you can really begin that journey for yourself. But now we're all collectively caught up in something that feels tragic, I think. And so it behooves us to take this more seriously, to use your spiritual life now, one, for yourself, because it will allow you to find a solidity, a ground of being that you can operate from. You won't be afloat in a world of upheaval. You will find something that holds you firm. But then the second part of this, and I talked about it last week, and I think it's really important. Your solidity will give strength to others. Your light will lead the way for others. Your kindness and compassion will make it possible for others to get through the day. You become the voice of wisdom. You become that which leads people through their own darkness. And I could feel it in class today. It was so strong that each one of you was being prepared in your own particular structure to become that force for others. It's more important than even for yourself. It's important because you have the capacity, whether you know it or not, you wouldn't be here if you didn't have it, to go out into the world and be compassion incarnate. To be the thing which makes the world whole together, that brings balance and love and understanding even when things don't look good outside. That's who you are. And I think, as a teacher, it's my responsibility to remind you and maybe point out who you are in the world. You know, I would love to lead you all to enlightenment and awakening, and I'm thinking perhaps this journey that we're all facing now will deepen this ride and do that. But even if it doesn't, even if you get no further than being a good person, trust me, the world needs you. It needs you, it needs all of this. Because what else have we got? And who do you have to turn to? Most of us don't have a lot of people to turn to because they're struggling. They don't know what to say. They don't know what to do. So you can just be that. You don't have to give them advice. You don't have to say, well, this is how it is. You don't have to use knowledge to confront ignorance, because it won't work. You just need to go, I get it. I understand. It's a hand on the shoulder. It's a hand holding a hand. It's love being emanated to the world. This is what we are. It's what we can do. In a way, it's kind of what we must do. But it's up to you. The great thing is, it's your choice. This is your ride. And we can be what we feel we need to be. I will tell you, one of the things that comes up inside me all the time, because I recoil from everything I'm saying. I recoil from, oh my God, do I got to do this again? Do I have to say this again? Do I need to be all this? And something comes up endlessly and says, yes. It says, it needs to be spoken. It needs to be lived. It needs to be inhabited. It needs you. That comes up continually. And that's why I'm sitting here. As I say to my classes often, I just say, look, I could just as easily go out for brunch on Sundays and be very content. And in truth, that's not where I go. I sit here and I give the same message pretty much week by week. But I have to say, something is happening in the world and in the culture, in our society and within us, that's allowing this message maybe to strike a chord today that it might not have struck a year ago. And that's important. And I could feel it in every one of you. I felt every one of you responding today in a way that I have not felt before. I could feel the very thing rising up that was afraid, that was in conflict with, that was having a hard time, and I was able to go to the pinpoint of every one of those things inside you and just go, and it went away. I'm telling you, every one of you, it went away. You all opened. Every one of you opened. That can be a permanent opening or it can be a temporary opening. I will sit here every week and reopen it. every month anyway, but you've got other good teachers here who will do it. But all I can tell you is, that's what we need. That's what we need. This is hard work. This is the hardest work there is. Getting to wisdom in life is what it's about. Getting to perspective, getting to a vision of life that allows you to be that which you want most from life, you have to be that. It's not going to necessarily come from outside, because not many people have figured this one out. So, be kind to yourself, be kind to others, be kind to the world. Know that you have a mission, I mean a real mission. It's not necessarily a placard-carrying mission, it's how you relate to your mandala. Rudy used to say the people around you, the closest ones to you, are your mandala. And that mandala expands outwardly. And a lot of people are fairly good at the outer rings of the mandala, but they're not good at the close rings of the mandala. The ones you have to relate to are the people you live with, the people who are right there. That's your job. Love, compassion, understanding as best you can for the person you're married to, living with, working with, whoever it is. If they're right there, they're yours. You have to find a way. How do I make this work? If you can't make this one work, how are you going to really make the other stuff work? Love from the inside out. Let it spread. Let it move out. Be the light. Be the giving person. Be the compassionate person. And figure out how to do it. It's hard. It's really hard. You all know it's hard. You know, you're good at it one day and terrible the next day. And what do you do about that? Well, you apologize and move on. So, I can you know, carry this out forever. And I know this was a long class. And it was a long class for a reason, by the way. Because each one of you were coming and presenting and meeting. Everybody got met. Everyone got met where they lived. Everybody. I'm glad you sat through it. I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you've heard these words, because, you know, maybe they will inspire you to do the very thing that's being spoken, which is be the thing that wants to be in the world. Be the person you can be. It's really important. And you combat ignorance with wisdom, and wisdom is a still-pointed knowing. It's a knowing. Get into still-pointedness, find that as your foundation, be the core of your own self, feel it, settle you, give you stability, and then let that stability help a shaky world. Okay. Any comments or concerns? Questions? No.